You are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers. We're breaking down the offensive line today. We're going through position by position here to kick off the offseason, grading the 49ers' current roster, and then looking at what could improve and how things could get better and a path to take for a better 2021. And I know everybody out there would love to have an improved year versus last year, especially from about February on. Some news around the league, the latest on Robert Saleh and his tour around the league with teams who need a new head coach. All but one team with a vacant head coaching job. Will has or wants to interview Robert Saleh, or already interviewed him twice. Saleh not the only 49ers assistant that is a hot name this year. And we'll finish up with some of your Twitter questions on a number of topics, including the hottest NFL rumor right now, Deshaun Watson. That story is definitely not going away. Find me on Twitter at BDPeacock. That's where the questions from today will be coming from. You can also email the show, LockedOn49ers, at Gmail. Of course, you can find this show everywhere. You already know because you're listening to it right now. You can also check out my NFL pod, which is coming at you daily here on the network with co-host Matt Williamson, former NFL and college scout, ESPN, now at Pro Football Network, and alongside me every day talking about the entire league. Robert Saleh had a two-day interview, an overnighter with the New York Jets. It sounded like he was maybe their guy and that they were talking dollars potentially and that he would be the next head coach of the New York Jets. But he has since left. That meeting has concluded and a hire has not happened, which makes me wonder, was it just a really good talk? Were there some other candidates? Was there like one more candidate the Jets needed to talk to? Or was it Robert Saleh himself saying, look, I can't say yes to the New York Jets without going to these other interviews. It might be bad for my career. Like, I have a feeling that's maybe what happened. And Robert Saleh felt like he owed it to himself to take these other interviews to see if there was a better job for him out there. And he's interviewing with everybody, all but one team, all but the Houston Texans so far have either interviewed him or asked to interview him. And he's a hot commodity around the league. So he'll get paid no matter where he goes. If he didn't feel like the New York Jets were his best opportunity and that he could still get one of those other jobs, then it's a great move. Now, if the Jets move on and end up hiring somebody else and Robert Saleh finishes second with all these other jobs and doesn't end up getting a head coach gig, then maybe it wasn't the right move for Robert Saleh. But who knows? He'll get a chance next year to interview if that's the case. And then a best case for the 49ers, then they still get Robert Saleh again this year. But it's really feeling like Robert Saleh is going to get a job somewhere, whether it's the New York Jets in the next day or so, or it's one of the other teams he's interviewed with. The one that we all thought maybe had the best chance of landing Robert Saleh was the Detroit Lions. And for some reason, there's not really been many reports on what exactly it was. Just a vague report that maybe his interview didn't go that well with the Detroit Lions, but his first interview went well enough with the Jets that they wanted him back, and it sounds like they really put the full court press on him and tried to hire him. We'll find out maybe more. Connor Rogers, who's connected with the Jets on Twitter, he's an NFL draft analyst for the Bleacher Report, was on this story, and he said that good news, it's not like the Matt Rhule situation, who the Jets interviewed before. Nothing went wrong. Both sides are just going through the process. Still risky to let a guy leave if you think he could be the hire, but it's not like there's a disagreement here. So, okay, good vibes there, but both the Jets and Robert Saleh want to go through the process. That kind of makes some sense. Albert Breer adds to it saying, in years past, bringing a coach or GM candidate back for a second interview most times meant you were really bringing him back to hire him. This year, I think, we'll see way more teams staging legit second interviews. And that's because the first interviews were mostly done over Zoom. Interesting. It's a great point by Breer that you want to have at least one face-to-face with the candidate. So do the Zoom interviews kind of not count? Or is that why there's such a bigger list of candidates for a lot of teams? Because they can rip through these Zoom interviews faster and don't have to bring everybody in. And maybe there's some more candidates that are available that might be in the playoffs in some other circumstances that they couldn't have interviewed normally. So interesting take there that makes a lot of sense from Albert Breer and Connor Rogers there. But right now, Robert Saleh, still the defensive coordinator of the San Francisco 49ers. Adam Peters, speculation, and I thought maybe the most logical place for Adam Peters, if he got hired away and it wasn't a team that Robert Saleh went to that needed a GM, was his former team, the Denver Broncos, but they went and hired GM George Payton, who, if you remember, was one of the candidates that was talked about in 2017 for the 49ers vacant GM job. He's been with the Minnesota Vikings for quite a while, and I think he's had interviews, and he's been a hot name on lists for a long time to become a GM. So he's going to the Denver Broncos, and it was Adam Peters who did have one interview, and Martin Mayhew also had an interview with the Washington football team. So those names are still out there that the 49ers could potentially lose from the front office in certain situations. And it's speculated that wherever Robert Saleh ends up, he's going to take one of the mics with him, either Mike LaFleur, the passing game coordinator, or Mike McDaniel, 49ers run game coordinator. But here's an interesting one from Joe Fan. You remember Joe Fan, used to cover the 49ers for 49ers.com, is now covering the Seattle Seahawks. He has defected, but still doing great work. He said, in my opinion, 49ers run game coordinator Mike McDaniel would be a great pick to be the Seahawks' next offensive coordinator. He's arguably the NFL's predominant run game expert. He'd provide fan-desired creativity while checking necessary boxes for Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll this week saying that maybe they're going to stop letting Russ cook and they want to run the football a little bit more. So that would give Pete the opportunity to run the ball more, but have a little bit more of a fun run game with Mike McDaniel, an up-and-comer who's well-versed in the Shanahan run game. And you know organizations around the league want to have a little piece of that Shanahan run game. So that would be a really rough loss for the 49ers, not only to lose Mike McDaniel, but to lose him to the Seahawks. Now, that hasn't been reported that he's on the list of candidates to replace Brian Schottenheimer as the offensive coordinator for Seattle, but that job is open, and that is just Joe's speculation, and I think that probably would be a pretty good move for the Seahawks, not only to help themselves, maybe hurt one of their division opponents as well. You know, and that brings up another aspect of this for the 49ers that's difficult, because normally the dominoes start falling a lot sooner with teams hiring coaches, and it's taking a little bit longer, and maybe it's because of the Zoom portion and everybody wants to have their top few candidates in for a face-to-face interview. It's taken longer for teams to hire some coaches, and usually there's teams that are waiting, but it's pretty clear that they're waiting for a coach that they know they're going to be able to hire that's going deep into the playoffs, sort of like it was with the 49ers and Shanahan. Once you realize they were waiting for the Super Bowl to be over, everybody knew it was like, okay, Shanahan's going to be the guy. Just waiting for him to actually become available. So there might be some of those, but most of the other teams had already hired their guys previous. And if Saleh is going to leave, the 49ers would probably rather it happen sooner than later so he can get hired, so they can figure out who their coordinators are going to be so they can make those plans. They don't want to sit back and wait and have coordinators, assistants poached, and then Robert Saleh leave, and then other teams have hired their coaches already, and then swiped up all of the available defensive coordinators that maybe Kyle Shanahan would be looking for to fill out his staff. So if Saleh leaves, I think it benefits the 49ers for that to happen sooner, so then they can go out there and figure out the rest of their coaching staff and have that all solidified and not be hanging in limbo and have to make some changes to their staff really late in the process when a lot of other coaches have already been hired. All right, offensive linemen. Who played well? Who didn't for the 49ers? Which spots really need to be upgraded most, and can they sign Trent Williams? Offensive line grades and your questions coming up. You are unique, and so are your taxes. The tax code is one of the most convoluted things. It's hard to keep up with changes year to year. So being able to navigate your personal tax situation easily and quickly is paramount for a lot of people. And TurboTax Live has experienced tax experts who listen to you, learn about your unique tax situations, and answer your questions. And on top of that, they can do your taxes from start to finish. Maybe you started investing and want some reassurance from an expert that you're doing things right. Maybe you're now self-employed and need some expert advice on what qualifies as a home office deduction. No matter what your situation is, TurboTax Live's tax experts can answer specific questions, walk you through the process, review your return before you file, or even do it all for you. TurboTax Live gives you confidence that your uniquely you taxes are done correctly. Intuit TurboTax Live. File with the help of an expert, or let an expert file for you. When it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good is that feeling of accomplishment, of hitting your fitness goals and feeling great about yourself. I have some big time fitness goals that I need to get working a little bit more seriously on myself because the pandemic was not kind to my waistline and my overall fitness level. And Echelon can help me. It can help you get there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, Echelon Stride Smart Treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of home. The EX7S is Echelon's latest state-of-the-art innovation that takes cycling to the next level. The world-class instructors will motivate you. Thousands of daily live and on-demand studio-level classes always available when you need them. Unlike their competitors, Echelon is affordable. And one membership lets up to five family members all work out at the same time. And right now, you can try Echelon Fitness equipment at home for 30 days. Go to echelonfit.com/lockedon. That's Echelon, Echelon, fit.com/lockedon. Okay, let's talk about the big boys. Let's give some love to the guys up front that I think played better than you might have thought. The thing is, every offensive line, it seems like, in the league is bad. You underestimate how bad some offensive lines are around the NFL. It's really an epidemic, and teams are trying so hard, and offensive linemen are getting drafted earlier and earlier in the NFL because it's so hard to block the physical freaks who are on the other side of the ball. And teams are trying to do so much on offense that you really need a varied skill set with your offensive linemen. Now, that doesn't mean you should go out and rush out and draft a bunch of interior offensive linemen in the first round. In my opinion, I think still you need tough, smart linemen. You need a good quarterback behind him that knows when to step up, and you need a good offensive coordinator who knows how to put his players into a good position. And I think the 49ers have some or a lot of that, and they have a decent offensive line. And they actually didn't play probably as bad as most 49ers fans are thinking right now. They ran the ball pretty well. Basically, they ran the ball good when good running backs were behind them. That's the way I would say it as far as the 49ers run game went. Raheem Mostert was still his 5 yards per carry self. He was just hurt. Jeff Wilson ran really well, 4.8 yards per carry. You'll take that all day. The problem is when the backups for those guys were in there, the 49ers did not have a lot of success. 3.9 yards per carry for Jerick McKinnon, who started a bunch of games earlier on in the season when Raheem Mostert was out. And that's just not the role he's cut out to play these days. And it really wasn't even in his early days in Minnesota. He was a third down back. Jamichael Hasty, a player I like for the future, but he's a change of pace guy. And I think he had that one costly fumble. And then after that, he started really putting both arms around the ball and was not as much looking for space as he was looking to not fumble the ball. I think that hurt him. He was right in that same area, 3.8 yards per carry. I think he's going to be back and be a big part of the 49ers rotation next year. I do like Jamichael Hasty, but he didn't have a great year. He started off with a bang and then sort of fell off a little bit. And, you know, I mean, he didn't really play all that much. He only carried the ball 39 times. Kyle Juszczyk, 3.8 yards per carry, but he's a fullback. Tevin Coleman is 1.9 yards per carry, right? So when Raheem Mostert, the guy they wanted to give the ball to the most, was in there, he was averaging 5 yards per carry. And the 49ers grades at PFF sort of bear that out. They ran block a lot better than they pass block to one player especially. But I want to start on the opposite side of the offensive line from that player and talk about Trent Williams. He's the elephant in the room for the 49ers. He's a big-time free agent hitting the market. They cannot put the franchise tag on him, so he will be a free agent and hit the open market, and we'll see if the 49ers can bring him back. He says he wants to be back. I think they'll try to get that deal done. But according to Pro Football Focus, the 49ers had the 9th best offensive line in the NFL. You can go to pff.com and find those rankings. I'll read a quick blurb from it. They said, for all the injuries, the offensive line was able to stay relatively healthy outside of the center position, where each of Daniel Brunskill, Ben Garland, and Ronis Grasu played 200 or more offensive snaps. The interior offensive line could be an area that the Niners look to upgrade this offseason, but all in all, it was an impressive showing for the offensive line this season. And I think that kind of goes to show you how bad some of the offensive lines are around the league, because I think most fans would say, yeah, the Niners line was pretty mediocre. They had a star player out on the left tackle position, and even Trent Williams had a couple of bad games early on, or just, you know, he had a couple hiccups early on in the season, but then was dominant the rest of the way. So if you're grading the offensive line as a unit, I would say they were at least above the midpoint of lines in the NFL. I'd give them sort of a C-plus grade. I don't think they were amazing. I think they could have played a lot better at times. I think maybe having to do patchwork at center probably hurts Kyle Shanahan's offensive lines more than maybe some other teams' offensive lines. But all in all, it wasn't a reason the 49ers were losing games. And I think if you can say that about a position group for the 49ers season that was insanely disappointing at 6-10, then that's probably a pretty good sign. So I don't know if they would be a top 10 offensive line for me, but they weren't in the bottom half of the league, clearly. And they have a star player at left tackle in Trent Williams, who had the highest PFF grade of any offensive tackle in the NFL last season. And he graded out great as a pass blocker, and he graded out fantastic as a run blocker. So Trent Williams, I mean, he gets an A. How much do you pay him? Can the 49ers afford it? Can they get that deal done is a big question going forward. The trade won't look as good if it was just a one-year rental for a third and a fifth-round pick in a losing season, but I think they're going to do what they have to do to make sure they sign Trent Williams and then worry about the salary cap stuff starting at that point after they get him signed. Left guard Laken Tomlinson, he gave up the second most pressures on the 49ers offensive line. And again, better run blocker than a pass blocker. According to PFF, his run block grade was 80.8, which was the third best on the 49ers offensive line for run grades, but a pretty mediocre 62.2 pass block grade. He only gave up three sacks, but he gave up a lot of pressures. But he cut down on the penalties, I think, which was important. Only two penalties all year for number 75, much to the delight of one Nicholas Winkler, who joins me weekly on this podcast. So Laken Tomlinson played fine, and I think he would probably get that. I mean, I think he represents well what the 49ers offensive line was this year. Better pass blocker than a better run blocker than a pass blocker. Didn't fall flat on his face. Wasn't great, but wasn't bad. I'll give Laken Tomlinson a C+. At center, the guy who played the most snaps there was Daniel Brunskill. And I think Daniel Brunskill is an offensive tackle. And I think playing guard maybe wasn't the best for him. And then all of a sudden being forced into action at center was terrible. So for him to even hold his head above water, I want to give Daniel Brunskill a lot of credit, even though he didn't play awesome at center. Again, a little better as a run blocker than a pass blocker. His PFF grades are not good, but I was impressed by the competitiveness from Daniel Brunskill to be forced in and still play okay. So I'm going to give him a passing grade as well and give him a C, even though he probably didn't play awesome and was definitely playing out of position all year. Props to him. Hopefully he gets moved back out toward the outside next year. The Niners need to figure something out at center this offseason. After signing Trent Williams, I think that's probably the number one place they need to look and potentially bring somebody in from outside the organization. At right guard, Colton McKivitz, the rookie, graded out extremely poorly, according to Pro Football Focus. He was bad in pass protection. He was a bad run blocker, kind of in and out of the lineup. Got a chance to start a little bit at the end of the year. Did not play great. He's not a physically impressive guy as far as athleticism. So that was one of the things I questioned with Colton McKivitz was when they drafted him, was the fit in the wide zone. Getting out on the move, it's not really his strength. And he's not linear enough, not long enough to stay at offensive tackle. I think that was clear when he was coming out of college. Most teams were looking at him as an offensive guard. But he's smart and he's tough, and I think that's the right way to scout players and draft offensive linemen on day three of the draft. He was a fifth-round pick. Draft smart, tough offensive lineman. Try to coach him up and hope you get something there. And we'll see what happens with Colton McKivitz. At this point, I would not feel comfortable saying, you know what, he needs to be the starting right guard moving forward. So right now, probably Daniel Brunskill if they don't do a lot of changes, but we'll see what happens there. That'll probably be the position with the most competition in training camp next year. As long as the next guy is still around, and I'm sure he will be, in Mike McGlinchey, who was a huge disappointment as a pass blocker this year, got even worse there, but was awesome as a run blocker. I mean, I can't imagine any offensive lineman in the league has this disparity in PFF grades between pass blocking and run blocking. He was an elite 91.3 run blocker, one of the top run blockers in the NFL at offensive tackle, right there with Trent Williams, who was a 91.8. But his pass blocking was 58.3. It was as bad as any of the starters on the offensive line. And he gave up the most pressures of all the offensive linemen on the 49ers with 37 pressures on the year. The most hurries, 21. Second most quarterback hits with 11, and he gave up 5 sacks, which was tied for the most of all the offensive. Actually, no, 5 was the most for all of the offensive linemen on the 49ers as well. And he actually kind of got worse as a pass protector going on into the season. Maybe it was because I was paying more attention to him and I was watching for it and I was kind of looking for it because he was so disappointing early on. But I think he got more sacks attributed to him too at the end of the year. And part of it is on the quarterback. I admit quarterback and offensive line really have a symbiotic relationship, and it's usually 50% on the quarterback and 50% on the offensive line. But McGlinchey clearly got beaten in the passing game multiple times, and there were some times when maybe he kind of got beat a little bit, but then maybe the quarterback could have stepped up and could have helped him out, but he didn't, which made it look even worse for Mike McGlinchey. But a big disappointment as a pass blocker. I don't know if he's ever going to be very good as a pass blocker. That was the reason why, and it's pretty telling. When you're an NFL draft prospect, and you're a big-time prospect, and you're playing left tackle in college, and every scouting report says, yeah, he probably is going to have to move to right tackle. That's usually a bad sign. And that's what Mike McGlinchey's scouting report was. And I thought he was sort of a late first, early second round type of a player. I was kind of surprised he went top 10, but I understood it. He needs to get better as a pass protector, though, if he's going to get that fifth year option picked up from the 49ers, which I think they're going to pick it up no matter what. But to deserve it and to deserve what probably a top 10 offensive tackle is going to get paid in his second contract, which is something the 49ers really have to think about. They pay Trent Williams $20 million. Are they going to pay Mike McGlinchey what most top 10 offensive tackles get in their second contracts in the NFL and be paying 30 plus upwards, nearly $40 million a year maybe for their starting offensive tackles? Does Mike McGlinchey warrant that? That would be the place where I would say the 49ers could potentially say, you know what, we'll listen to offers for Mike McGlinchey. Maybe we'll add Mike McGlinchey as a player to some trade if we're trying to get something done with moving up in the draft or something like that. It's not out of the realm of possibilities. I doubt it will happen. I think the 49ers really like Mike McGlinchey. They like the player, they like the person, and he is a really good run blocker. So he does have that. I would give him it's really hard because he's such a good run blocker. But if I could choose, I would have a mediocre run blocker and a great pass protector, right? Especially for an offensive tackle in the NFL. He takes a lot of heat. Some of it's warranted, maybe more heat than necessary because of the highlight nature of some of the misses in pass protection. But I'm going to give him probably something like it's hard. I want to be harsher on him, but I'm going to give him a C minus. I'm going to give him a C minus. So he gets to pass. He gets his degree. I don't really know who to grade as far as the right guards go. Do you grade Brunskill there, who started early? Do you grade Tom Compton? Do you grade Colton McKevitt? Just kind of combine them all together. I think they got D production out of their right guard spot all year. And their backups didn't really do much. Like Ben Garland, I think, was a really good find for the 49ers and played pretty well at center. But now with his injuries mounting, I don't know if he'll be back. We'll see what happens there. But if they had Garland all year at center and were able to stick with Brunskill at right guard, I think that line would have even played up better than the number 9 overall rating that Pro Football Focus gave them in 2020. So they need to continue to add depth, young depth. Maybe one of those extra third rounders that they get if Robert Saleh gets hired away. Like, bring on more Colton McKivitzes. Hope you hit on some of those guys. The 49ers have a bunch of 5th, 6th, 7th round draft picks this year. So keep drafting those offensive linemen. Try to add depth. I don't think, even though right guard is a position they could absolutely upgrade, I think if they're going to spend resources, maybe you bring in a veteran center like Alex Mack, who I don't think is going to break the bank at all. In this kind of an offseason, I think he might even actually be a bargain for a Kyle Shanahan offense. You definitely can't count on Weston Richburg. I think Richburg's right there along with Dee Ford and players that they have to hope that they can pass a physical so they can cut them at some point this offseason. So maybe that's the upgrade, and then you just have a death match at right guard and hope that whole thing plays out. And who knows? Maybe they end up shaking it up even more than that, and Daniel Brunskill ends up getting some starts at right tackle, which I would not be against because I think that's Brunskill's best position. So expect more of the same, I think, on the 49ers offensive line next year. Maybe they're able to add a center and probably some later round depth on the offensive line and hope to find some gems in the NFL draft Would not expect big free agent dollars other than Trent Williams unless Trent Williams leaves. Maybe they'll have to look at another avenue in free agency there. I would not expect a top 50 draft pick in the first or second round with their needs, potentially a quarterback, corner, and an edge pass rusher, which needs that just really trump interior offensive line when you're spending those type of draft picks and resources. You're going to spend them on quarterback, pass rusher, and corner all day long before a guard, in my opinion. But overall, as bad as offensive line play in the NFL is, the Niners' offensive line really is not the problem to be most worried about this offseason. Okay, it's time to fire it up. Let's see what kind of tweets and emails we got from you, the listeners. My apologies, Nick and I, it happens sometimes. And we didn't hit any questions yesterday, so we'll hit some today. We'll hit some again on Friday as well. NFL futures, when it comes to the draft, when it comes to coaching hires, is one of my favorite things you can bet on at betonline.ag. Bet on who the Super Bowl winner will be. National championship game already up for 2022. And the NHL season, puck drops today. And you can get in on all the action at BetOnline. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Divisional playoff round action, game props, NBA season in full swing. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use promo code LOCKEDON to receive 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Got a question here from SF Sports Fan. It says, hey, Brian, this question is from Quinn. All right, holler to Quinn. Thank you for the question. What are some off-season dates that Niners fans can look forward to until training camp rolls around? Well, let's see. Obviously, the NFL draft is a big one, but before that, there are some other dates. And I think the most important date for the NFL draft this year, and maybe even more so than the combine, because I don't even know what the combine is going to look like at the end of February, but January 30th is the Senior Bowl, which is always the kickoff of the proper NFL draft season. And maybe this year, more than ever, it'll be really important for seeing some players on the field and seeing these guys compete, because there's a lack of games during the fall. Super Bowl, obviously, in February. That was a lot more fun last year than it will be this year on Sunday, February 7th. Then the Combine, which is usually a big deal. I have no idea what form the Combine will be in this year. So that will be interesting and just another wrinkle to how difficult this scouting period, I think, has been for all NFL teams, which is good and bad. I think you're going to be able to see some teams steal some amazing players later in the draft that maybe went under the radar a little bit in some years that wouldn't have happened, and maybe some colossal busts at the top. Who knows? We'll see how that ends up. March 15th is when teams can start tampering with other teams' free agents. A couple days later, March 17th is the actual day that those things can become real, but so much happens there at the beginning of the new league year, March 17th, and the 2 days prior when teams have the legal tampering period where they can start announcing players that they have signed. Then some off-season dates, not for the 49ers in April, but teams with new head coaches can start their workout programs early. For the 49ers, they'll probably have maybe some mini camps, maybe a post-draft rookie camp, but those things are still up in the air. I don't have any dates yet for OTAs, organized team activities, and mini camps and things of that nature. And who knows, maybe another offseason where a lot of those things don't happen. We'll see. Hopefully these vaccines get rolled out and those things can happen. But maybe it's another offseason where not much practicing and mini camps happen until training camp in July. But the big one is the NFL draft, April 29th through May 1st. It's supposed to be in Cleveland, Ohio. I doubt it'll be there, just like last year where it didn't happen in Las Vegas as scheduled. So those big events like the combine and the draft are going to look a lot different again. Well, the draft at least will look a lot different again, I'm sure. And the combine was normal last year. That will probably be an oddball situation, but I don't think the league is going to let that not happen either. So a lot of money to be made, and I'm sure agents and prospects want to get their people out in front of teams, and so we'll see what the combine looks like. But the NFL draft, April 29th, is going to be a lot of fun. Those are the big dates so far that we know about this offseason. Robbie, adding to our conversation yesterday about quarterback Trey Lance from South Dakota State, who was born in the year 2000, Robbie says, so Tom Brady was drafted to the Patriots a little over 3 weeks before Trey Lance was born. Wow. 20-year-old Trey Lance was not alive when Tom Brady was drafted. It's mind-blowing. To Jeff on Twitter, he says, does your approach to the draft change if Trent Williams walks? I foresee Williams getting a big contract in Cincinnati to pair with Burrow while he's still cheap on his rookie contract. I could see a team like the Bengals or the Jaguars, maybe the Dolphins or the Jets. I mean, some teams that have some big cap space still. I can't remember how much the Dolphins have left. They spent a lot last year. And the Patriots too, man. The Patriots have a lot of cap space this year and they value the position. But most of those teams aren't better than the 49ers. So does he want to win? Does he want to stay where he is right now and play for Shanahan? If it's very close, if it's at least breaking the tie, does somebody go massive and make a deal that the 49ers can't match? I don't know if I see that happening, but it does change the draft. Absolutely. The 49ers, I thought last year, I mean, knowing what we know now, because we didn't know when the first round was happening that Joe Staley was going to retire, the 49ers did. The fact they didn't draft Tristan Wirfs when they were on the clock at 13 was ballsy because they didn't have that trade done yet for Trent Williams either. And if Trent Williams walks, it still makes that look bad. And I think Tristan Wirfs should have been the pick if that's the case. And it's too important. Left tackle is too important. You're not going to put McGlinchey out there at left tackle. Brunskill could probably be a stopgap guy, I guess. But you're scrambling if that's the case, either in free agency or you have to draft a guy in the first or second round, probably round one at offensive tackle to try to replace a massive hole at left tackle there from Trent Williams walking. And it wouldn't be a 2021 offseason podcast, apparently, if we don't talk a little bit about Deshaun Watson. So a couple quick questions there. One from Ben, he says, I just listened to the episode. I got to say, I don't get selling the farm for Watson. Trade Jimmy G for a pick to offload his salary, draft either Jones or Trask, and trade for someone like Minshew. He is super accurate and would likely be sold for super cheap. I like the Minshew idea, but for Minshew, it doesn't really change anything because, okay, good, you got a backup. Like, that's the way I look at Minshew, and there's a number of quarterbacks. Mitch Trubisky is the same way. Like, first of all, they have to come cheap, and okay, cool, you upgraded backup, but it really doesn't factor in with the starting quarterback situation, Jimmy Garoppolo. If you trade Garoppolo, just to put the Watson thing aside, if you trade Garoppolo, now you go into the draft with the 12th pick, and you're pretty much pigeonholing yourself into drafting a quarterback. And I don't think Trask and Mac Jones are number 12 overall quarterback prospects. And the other four players that I think are number 12 overall prospects might not be there at 12. So you're almost forcing yourself into a situation where you have to spend the resources to trade up for a quarterback if you go into the draft with Minshew and CJ Beathard and nobody else. So if you're trading multiple picks to move up for an unknown quarterback, why not try to put together a package for Deshaun Watson? So I don't love that scenario because it really forces the 49ers' hand to make sure they have to do something. And I don't think the 49ers want to do that either. The 49ers probably most likely will do the opposite where they go into the draft with Jimmy G and say to themselves, look, if quarterback X falls to 12, maybe we'll take him, but we're not going to force it. And if not, then we're not going to draft a quarterback there. Maybe we'll trade down and then draft Jones or Trask later, maybe trade up from the second round or just wait for the second round to see if Jones or Trask are there. But as of now, and I have a lot of evaluating to do with these quarterbacks, I wouldn't draft Jones or Trask at 12. And Jordan says, is anyone untouchable when it comes to trading for Watson? And I'll continue to say this. The Deshaun Watson thing is so unlikely, not only for the 49ers, but for anybody. I don't think he's going to get traded. Is anyone untouchable? No. No. I've heard there's been a lot of talk about Nick Bosa recently. You've got to think about it from the other side. If you are Nick Caserio, Houston GM, you don't want to trade Watson as it is, but you're forced into a situation. So you're talking to teams, and some teams are willing to offer multiple first-round picks, some of them much higher than the pick that the 49ers can offer. If the Dolphins offer number 3 overall, that's worth more than the 49ers' first-round pick this year and next year, right? So that's what you're bidding against. Then Nick Caserio is like, okay, well, so this is what you have to beat. And okay, you have to give us your first rounder, but you got to give us a player. We want Nick Bosa. And you're talking about a defensive lineman coming off an ACL. You're not going to trade that for a 25-year-old superstar quarterback that's one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, it's kind of insanity to say that you wouldn't do that. And I know a lot of fans love Nick Bosa, and he's an awesome player, and he's really impactful, and he plays an important position. But he's coming off of an ACL, the second of his football career. Now, I know there's a ton of 97s in Levi's Stadium whenever Levi's Stadium opens back up to actually have fans in the seats, but it pales in comparison to the value of what a quarterback is that's as good as Deshaun Watson. If you really want Deshaun Watson, you have to be willing to do that. And if you're not willing to do something big and give up a ton, then you're just not going to end up with him anyway. So, and to me, if you're just talking Nick Bosa versus Deshaun Watson, like some people are like, no, you cannot include Nick Bosa. And to me, that's insanity because Watson's just infinitely more valuable than Nick Bosa, as good as Bosa is. And it would hurt, but it hurts Houston to trade Deshaun Watson. So it's got to hurt the other way, too. Then that's how you know it's a good trade, if both sides are hurting and both sides are also kind of feeling good about it, right? So it's not going to happen, so don't worry about it. You don't have to do anything with your 97 jerseys. And I think the 49ers would probably try to do everything they can to not have to include Nick Bosa, but you at least have to consider that. And if not, you're probably throwing, you know, three firsts and a couple of seconds and a couple of thirds. And it's something massive like that as part of a package. And then, you know, Jimmy G either there or Jimmy G somewhere else to get you an extra third round pick to add to any sort of a Watson trade. All right. Good stuff. Thanks everybody for the questions. Keep them coming. We'll hit some more next time. We'll hit some more next week. Continue grading players here, looking ahead to how to improve the 49ers roster all offseason long, right here, Locked On 49ers.